Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Sir Ian Morris.
And sir, you beat me to the punch there. I was going to call you sir.
Very good. Well, we just had a conversation before this started about how I haven't been honoured by the king, and that's a disgrace.
It is. I still think that one day we may achieve something that somebody thinks they should be knighted for that.
We should set up a charity. That's a better way to get a knighthood, isn't it?
It's a good way to avoid certain amounts of tax, certainly. Hopefully we can achieve it through podcasting. Stranger things have happened, and we're going to talk about some of those in our news sections throughout this week's show. I hope you're all having a wonderful week so far. Ian certainly isn't.
I didn't say it was awful, but yes, there have been challenges to ascend.
Yeah, we had a good chat in the pre-show today. If you want to hear about Ian's bowel movements, please become a patron. Go and listen to it.
Well, that's going to sell us no extra Patreon subscriptions.
Depends. I installed smart valves on all my radiators this week.
Which brand did you go for?
I went for Hive because...
Oh, interesting. I've got some of those knocking around. I've never put them on. Are they worth it?
So far, I would say yes. I bought a five-pack, and I fitted them to all the key radiators in the house and did a little bit of calibrating. And I have to be honest, it does make a very, very significant difference, at least based on the last 24 hours.
It hasn't been that cold either, so I haven't had my heating on.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought it's a good time to do this because it's not so hot that having the heating on will boil us to death. It's not so cold that if I screw it up, Kate won't divorce me for freezing her.
Yes.
So it felt like the smart time to do it, and so far it does work, and it makes sense. You can heat one room without heating the others, allegedly. You can heat the house based on the temperature of all rooms as opposed to the thermostat, which sits in the hallway.
That's very useful.
You know, so it can dynamically...
Now, do you have a Hive thermostat as well, controlling a boiler?
I do.
Yes, you see, now, so did you fit your own or did you get someone to do it for you?
I had the people who installed the boiler fit the Hive system.
Here's the story, right? I was going to test Hive for a previous work engagement that I was involved with. And then that engagement was broken off and I've still got the equipment and they had real trouble getting an installer. So I've still got the equipment and I thought, well, it's here. I might as well use it. But my boiler is... a weird brand. It was installed by the previous people who lived here, and they obviously decided that going to the cheapest possible manufacturer was the way to go. So I don't know exactly how that will work, but I hate the existing thermostat. It's a pain to use, it's difficult, complicated and annoying, and I do have the kit, so I could have it. If I could find an installer, I could get it installed and then I could, you know, probably tweet about it or talk about it in here. So I'm interested that your experience is positive, because that has sort of G'd me up. The radiator valves are really easy to fit. You can do them yourself, can't you?
I did them all myself, all the valves myself. The thermostat system was fitted by people who did the boiler about a year and a half ago, but the actual valves I did. I would say the first one took me about 10 minutes, but that included the entire time to figure out how to do it. And I did the others in about another 10, 15 minutes in total. So it's a very quick operation. If I came to yours now, I reckon I could fit yours in under 2 minutes.
Really? That's interesting. So, I mean, realistically, in the time it takes us to record this podcast, I could have used that time to install smart radiators on three of my... smart valves on three of my radiators.
You really could have. And I'll keep everyone abreast of how it goes, because I know that's why you're listening.
Oh, please do.
How is my home heating system going? But it just, for me, makes a lot of sense. For instance, if I'm not at work in the daytime and Kate's working from home in her office, she has a Siri command that turns all the appropriate lights and desk things on in her office, and now that can be extended to also telling the heater that if it is not already at the temperature she wants it to be and has set it to be, it'll heat up to just that temperature and we'll leave the rest of the house cold, or at least not as warm, which yes. is just a much better use of energy and money, and also just makes sense. So
agreed.
Yes. We're going to come to what you have done this week in a little bit, Ian, because I know you've been building like your 900th PC or something. But we'll, yes. we'll come back to that, because I wanted to talk about something the children in the European Parliament have been doing. I'm sure you've heard of it, but I'm going to tell you the answer anyway, just so you don't guess incorrectly. They voted in favour of a law that would force companies, and by companies we basically mean Apple, to put USB-C connectors onto phones and quite a large number of other products. It was a pretty close call, by all accounts. 602 MPs said aye, 13 said no. For some reason, 8 abstained. I couldn't be bothered looking into why 8 decided to abstain from such a relatively trivial...
They might have been in the bathroom at the time.
Well, certainly. That is a possibility. What does this mean? Well, assuming the member states, that is the 27 remaining members of the European bloc, agree later this month, and they are expected to, for what it's worth, it means that smartphones, tablets, and a bunch of other devices will have to use USB-C if they have a physical connector from 2024. Now, that's only 2 years away at the time of recording. I looked on GSM Arena at every phone in both its most read list and its highest rated list. Basically, every most popular current device I could see on there, every single one, without a single exception, had USB-C already, except for the iPhones. So this really is, I think it's pretty fair to call this a move to force Apple into joining everyone else on the USB-C train. Now this doesn't. It should be worth mentioning, of course, this doesn't apply to the UK because we're not in the EU. And according to the BBC, the government here has said it wasn't currently considering introducing a common charging cable. It's got many other things to consider right now, I'm sure. Now, there are a couple of things that stood out. Now, the EU's argument is obviously it's pointless having multiple chargers because you get bundles of them, even though you could argue that all the most popular phones are USB-C now anyway, so having a drawer full of cables is no more likely now than it was before. But by the by, it's trying to consolidate that. And it's also not just for mobile phones. I'm going to go with what I read in the legal document here from the EU. It says, the legislation covers mobile phones, tablets, digital cameras, headphones, headsets, handheld video game consoles, portable speakers, e-readers, keyboards, mice, earbuds, and portable navigation devices. Laptops will have to be adapted to the requirements as well 40 months after the law enters force. So laptops get a little bit of extra time. Again, many, although certainly far fewer overall, are USB-C equipped already as far as power is concerned. Apple actually does use USB for charging connectivity. So the Mac range is basically fine. Apple had said, this is in the same document that the EU had, it says that it would freeze innovation. It would be bad for the environment and unnecessarily disruptive to consumers. Before we move on, Ian, what's your take on Apple's position here?
It's difficult because I don't think that Apple was intending to continue using Lightning for very much longer. It is a connector that has very much had its day. It was very innovative at the start. It offered a lot of the features that USB simply didn't have. For example, it could be put in either way round, which is something that people really liked. It also was fairly quick, I believe, given what else was available at the time. And of course, there are a mountain of accessories available for Apple devices that make use of that connection. I mean, it's obviously less common these days because people have generally moved to sort of streaming music wirelessly. But one of the big things was having a little dock which had a speaker so you could listen to your music in the bedroom or wherever else you fancied. So that invalidates all of that hardware, and it must go then into landfill because it will be nearly useless. So I do kind of sort of side a little bit with Apple, although I don't necessarily think it's a huge deal because ultimately I don't think it had long anyway. Lightning's pretty badly outdated now and extremely slow, and although people as a rule don't use cables to get things on and off their devices anymore, it is a consideration. And having a faster, say a USB 3 connector would improve things greatly.
Question for you, do you think Lightning will be around for the next 30 years?
Well, this is a facetious question,
so don't think
well,
too.
If you could just
answer no for the purposes of my point.
No.
Right. Good. I agree. Because in which case, why not just get rid of it now then?
Absolutely. And I don't actually think that this ruling... although people sort of like to frame this as, this is a victory. Apple must drop Lightning, the sucky connector that we've all used for 10 years, and use USB-C, which is a good thing, of course, but why is it? It isn't really a good thing in this context. You mentioned the other devices. That I have far more problems with using cables on, you know, to recharge my wireless mouse, and the litany of connectors that Philips has used over the years for electric razors. I have got 3 Philips razors and 3 different cables, none of which are interoperable, meaning that if I misplace the cable for one, I can't use it anymore. I can't simply plug another one in. So things like that, low voltage electric toothbrushes, all that kind of stuff, I guess you could make the argument that having a standardized connector would do more good in that industry. When it comes to phones, probably a staggering number of people probably just opt for wireless charging now, or wired charging, as you like to call it.
Yeah.
And Apple has its own solutions. I myself recharge my iPhone using a magnetic MagSafe wireless charging dock, and the watch is charged that same way. And, you know, and I think Apple will be forced to put a USB-C connector on the other end because this is... A sort of a whole thing, isn't it, right? So, you know, everything will be a USB-C connector. And so, you know, I feel like this was inevitable. I don't know whether Apple will just say to hell with it. We'll just put a wireless charger in the box.
Well, firstly, there are a few things I have to address here. The first thing is, products won't be put in the box because a big part of this, and has been the case for many companies already, is that shipping chargers and things in the box, and sometimes even cables, is not necessary. You know, they are an additional purchase, but they're rarely needed for purchase because you've already got one. So I don't think we'll get to a point where there are chargers in the box. And certainly if we do ever get to the point where chargers are being shipped in the box, you can almost guarantee that the law will stipulate that they have to be sold as an option without, because otherwise it defeats the whole purpose of all of this.
That would have been a good thing to do, but they didn't do that, did they?
I also believe that Apple in particular has been working on USB-C on future iPhones, and I'll include some links in the show notes at uktechshow.com/episodes, and you can go and read a bit more about that if you wish. However, there is a line, when I was reading through this document, preparing this script today, there is a line that I think could shed a lot of light into what we'll end up seeing happen on certain phones here, because there is a line that says... The new rules would apply to handheld mobile phones, tablets, digital cameras, headphones, headsets, handheld video game consoles, and portable speakers capable of being recharged through wired charging. That, in my head, says if it has any physical charging port, it has to be USB-C or compatible with USB-C. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't have any capability to be charged via a cable, this is not a law to say you have to add one, which is,
yes,
which is why, for instance, an Apple Watch, a wireless toothbrush charging, those products aren't suddenly going to have USB-C hacked into them because they don't need it in the first place.
No, but you will have to, you presumably would have to sell them, would you not, with a USB connector? Because the point is that they're trying to stop the people buying and selling, or, you know, selling different standards of wall adapters.
This is,
I will.
This is all, right now we're talking, everything is on the device side of things.
Right.
So it's a device end of the cable that this really concerns. And those products don't have a physical connection anyway. They already use wireless, and the iPhone already has wireless charging via Qi, which is a standard used by many smartphones and other devices. So it's not out of the question to think that rather than putting USB-C into one of these products, it would actually be much more Apple-like in Apple's instance, and we are, as we've discussed, thinking about this largely in terms only of Apple, it would make sense for Apple to just say, right, fine, well, we just won't include a port on it at all. We'll just block it up.
I think they might do that.
And just go without, because it's...
But that will cause problems to people, because as someone said in the chat, Mike said, non-tech people don't use wireless charging.
They don't.
Which, so that it, that does suggest to me that, you know, if they did that, they would have considerable problems unless they opted to include something in the pack, like you know, for example, with Apple, they could include just the charging magnet thing, you know, the MagSafe connector with a cable on it, and then you could use that.
Yeah,
but, I mean, it's an interesting idea, but it would cost them a lot of money to do that, I think, although I don't imagine the hardware is very expensive. But of course, Apple doesn't do cheap things, so everything is built to within an inch of its life of metal and high-grade plastic, so it would have a knock-on effect. Anyway,
Ian in the live chat asks, what happens when the next USB standard comes out? Well, the next USB standard uses the USB Type-C connector. So yes, at least for the foreseeable future, that is the connector of choice.
That's a very capable connector. I mean, it's already doing what Lightning is it Lightning 4 or whatever, Thunderbolt 4.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It does DisplayPort. It's a very capable connection, because you've got Type C as the type of connector, but then you've got the type of USB protocol that goes through it. It could be USB 3.2, it could be 3.1, it could be 3, it could be a whole number of things. It could have Thunderbolt, it could not have Thunderbolt, it can support video signals, it can only support power potentially if you wanted. Like, it's a very flexible port, so I think that's good.
It's
and also,
very confusing.
Well, there's also the fact that there's only a certain size a connector can get to before it stops being sturdy, because a lot of these devices do have docks, or they have to be mounted in a car, and if you go too small, you lose some of the stability that comes with having a reliable connector.
Well, and also bear in mind that we're now passing quite substantial voltages through these cables. You know, to charge a laptop, you know, you're talking about 60 to 100 watts of power flowing through. Very good. Flowing through a very small cable. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a license to have fires, one might say.
Well, if you've got any views on this, obviously drop us a line. hello@uktechshow.com. What's your view on the USB-C mandate? Let us know, people. Got a relevant quiz for you this week, mate.
Okay.
A really relevant quiz. Would you like to be involved? I'm going to say it's better than last week's.
Okay.
I'm going to say it's better. We haven't even done it yet, but I'm already saying it's going to be better because I think.
Okay. Yep.
Because I think it will be. Okay. This is a quiz I'm calling Guess the Cable. I've got four cables.
Yes.
I'm gonna do this as a who am I, and you have to guess.
Okay.
Who I am. I am the cable.
I'm not looking forward to this, but carry on.
Really? Okay.
Well, I can see the questions and they're difficult.
All right. Question one. I was created by Apple in the 90s and sometimes was referred to as iLink.
mean, this is difficult. I don't think I know the answer to this.
Really?
I mean, it wasn't Firewire, was it?
Yeah, it was Firewire.
Was it?
It was Firewire. Well done.
I thought it was Firewire Apple. I thought it was Intel. It was. Or am I getting confused? That's Thunderbolt, right?
Thunderbolt was Apple and Intel. Firewire was Apple, yeah.
Okay. Well, I got the answer right, so let's have a little celebration. Have you got like a...
There you go.
Very good. Excellent.
All right. Let's go back to the song. Question two. I was also created by Apple, but in 2008. And today you'll find me almost nowhere thanks to USB-C's success. Let's say I was also quite visually focused. 2008. No.
No, I don't think I know this one.
Game over.
The answer there, of course, was Mini DisplayPort. 2008. Do you want another one?
Yeah, sure.
All right. I wasn't created by Apple and was born just before the millennium. I could see, but I couldn't speak.
Huh.
1999, if memory serves. I didn't write that down, but I think it's 1999.
Well, initially, DisplayPort couldn't carry audio.
Mm-hmm.
Is the answer to that DisplayPort?
Game over.
No.
Oh, dear.
DVI.
Okay.
DVI didn't carry audio, you terrible, stupid, awful person.
This quiz has taken a dark turn.
Let's see if it finalizes its darkest turns then. Question four, the last. I am a round cable with standard definition and nobody likes me at all.
Well, that's got to be an RCA cable, surely.
Game over.
Not a chance, mate. No, S video. Standard definition. Round connector. Basically useless. We all hate it.
Can I just ask, were the answers there all the time in white, on a white background?
Yes.
Well, that's brilliant. Very ingenious.
Thank you.
Okay, yes, I mean, fair enough. I will accept that is... you've defeated me there.
I have, yeah. Morris, tell me about YouTube. Tell me about YouTube, sir.
I will. YouTube, the video advert streaming platform from Google, is testing a new plan to cap videos at 1080p unless viewers are prepared to upgrade to premium. Videos at 4K and 8K will, if the plan ends up being deployed, only be available to premium subscribers. YouTube Premium costs $11.99 a month and doesn't stop users from having to listen to integrated sponsor messages that video creators build in. But along with this potential move to paywall high-quality video, YouTube has also been testing increasing numbers of ads before videos, some online users reporting 10 or 12 adverts before watching a video. According to The Verge, YouTube has 50 million paying subscribers globally, but an audience of 2.2 billion, leaving executives salivating at unmonetized potential customers. Will increasing adverts help persuade people to upgrade, or will it be 1080p video that pushes them over the edge? One thing's for sure, Nate, YouTube won't let free users enjoy the experience of watching videos.
You know what? I don't have a problem with this.
I do.
Because... there are loads of examples in the world, and I would pick out Netflix as one.
Well, I don't like that either.
Where you get your standard definition for one rate, which in this case is no money at all in ads, or in Netflix's case is just not as much.
Well, it's
as
a lot
top,
of money. It's not like seven top, quid, isn't it?
Not the top plan. And if you want to get 4K, high, you know, ultra HDR, blah, 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 8K stuff, then pay a bit of extra money. I honestly, maybe this has surprised people, but I don't think this is bad.
Well,
the ads thing, we're seeing this across the board because we're seeing Instagram test more ads apparently in a greater number of things, which seems like a wonderfully smart way to get even more people to use TikTok instead. But I just don't think that charging for very high resolution is necessarily a terrible thing.
Well, I, you know what? I'm not unsympathetic to this idea. However, my problem with YouTube Premium is that they force you to have Apple YouTube Music. And obviously, you are paying a premium for that. So $11.99 for YouTube is very expensive, I would say, given the amount of video I stream from it in comparison to other streaming services, in terms of sort of, say, hours and minutes. I would be happy to subscribe to YouTube for, say, £6 a month if I didn't have to have YouTube Music as well. That's ultimately why I cancelled my premium membership, because it's too expensive for something I don't use half of. And to be honest with you, actually, I don't think this is going to work as well as I think it is, because when I sort of think about the amount of videos I watch, 90% of them don't need to be in 4K. There are very few creators out there who justify using 4K. You know, those who have sort of quite professional setups, I'm thinking MKBHD being a great example of someone who does an absolutely phenomenal job of really high quality videos that are worth watching in 4K. Everyone else is sort of shooting on their phone. Half of it's out of focus. You can't hear anything anyway because the audio is all cack. So really, I'm not going to care. I'm just going to stick to 1080p. It'll be fine.
I'm in that boat with you. I also wouldn't upgrade for this. I just also don't have a problem with it being a thing that's rolled into an offering. If a lower price for just ad-free, clutter-free YouTube experience would be very tempting, but I don't even think with that I'd pay more than £5 a month.
I'll let you into a little secret that my ad blocker, which previously didn't work with YouTube, now seems to have started working with YouTube, so I very rarely see adverts unless I watch on a smart TV. And in that case, I actually find it so annoying that I just don't bother watching. So if YouTube wants to sort of tank its subscriber numbers, one thing that made me laugh the other day is I was watching a tech video, and the sponsor message of the creator was interrupted by an advert. I thought, this is brilliant. Capitalism is a real success story.
Yeah. What are the main things you watch on YouTube then?
I watch a lot of people doing car restorations and you know, car reviews. I watch quite a lot of that. I watch a lot of tech. As I have mentioned previously, I watch a lot of Linus Tech Tips. I think they're really good. I watch MKBHD because he's brilliant, and every video he does is a sort of minor work of art. So sometimes I'll get sort of talked into watching by the algorithm a video of a sort of mid-20s person living in a van.
Yeah, I see.
They're all living in vans, basically.
Are they? Well, that's because it's
all of them.
It's cheap. Yeah,
it is cheap.
Cheaper. Yeah, I would say 90% of everything I watch on YouTube is drum related. Drum techniques and a lot of drum performances. It's mostly that. And so for me, the appeal is good quality, but it doesn't need to be 4K. The real benefit, if there was a high percentage of drum videos that were made at 60 or even 50 frames a second in HD or 4K,
ooh,
mix that with ad-free, that would very much tip me over the edge, because a lot of the stuff that I watch and the type of drumming that I play is extremely, extremely fast. Having the ability to see something at 50 frames a second makes a pretty significant difference in terms of how easily I can see their techniques and the nuances of those techniques.
I love watching high frame rate YouTube videos.
Yeah,
it's arguably a bigger selling point than 4K, frankly, because seeing something at 50 or 60 frames a second just makes it so much nicer to watch.
In the Discord, some of the listeners are talking about having a VPN holiday, i.e. I think enabling a VPN so it looks like you're in another country, and then using YouTube and then taking up one of the offers to sign up for cheap. It does seem that India might be one place you might want to take a virtual jaunt to do
or
that.
Or, you know, literally go to India as well. The food is exquisite.
Yes, and there are many good reasons to go to India, but it will probably cost you more than a VPN subscription for a day, which I believe is the point here. So, in conclusion, it's not something that YouTube has decided it's definitely going to do, but it is definitely trying it. And I think a big part of it is it needs to get more money out of its users because the ad market is changing rather significantly. And we have seen that across huge numbers of businesses. And I think YouTube is as privy to those fluctuations in the market as anybody else. Is 4K a good way to do that? It's a way. It may not be the way. But yeah, if it's your way, ladies and gentlemen and kids and the dead who are listening beyond the grave, then let us know. Send us an email. hello@uktechshow.com. Do you know who I'm grateful to, Ian?
Is it me?
It is you. I'm grateful to you for many reasons. You've changed my life for the better, and you've kept me informed about why it's okay to just let go as you get older. it's just all right.
Death by a thousand cuts.
Just to stop caring and just live life. However, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No, the other people I'm grateful to, as I know you are too, Ian, is our patrons. I'd like to.
Oh yes, I'm very grateful to them.
To Billy. Who else am I grateful to this week? Mike, of course. Kenji, I'm grateful to. Peter and a few others. Alex Bailey, I'd like to say thank you to. You know who you are. I'd like to just say thank you to you all. If you'd like to get the full version of our show every week, ad free, extra content, get extra message, get all sorts of stuff, join our Discord and so on, go to patreon.com/UK Tech. We would very much like to have you support us that way. And if you are one of those patrons, you're about to hear our third discussion story for this week. That little bit of sound always at the end reminds me of one of the levels in Sonic the Hedgehog 1 or 2. I forget which
the
one.
Jolly little ditty. I do like it quite a lot.
Yeah. It's called Interstitial 7 2022 on my soundboard. Don't know what it was originally called on Pond 5, but yeah, that. Bit of feedback. Billy asked on Patreon which PIR, that is passive infrared motion sensor, did I use for the motion sensing in my kitchen? I answered in the Patreon comments, but I thought I'd answer here too. Eve Motion, in part because it worked with HomeKit, in part because it had thread technology, and in part because of the infrared usability, because it's better than using visual light, uses infrared to detect heat. And I believe the foxes that run past our kitchen window every evening trigger it. So I need to find a slightly better position for it to be, because I don't want foxes triggering my movement sensor. Thank you very much. Raphael wrote in comments on, I think, last week's show, wasn't it? He says, I'm in IT support, so whenever I hear the word printer, or even worse, label printer, I run away as fast as I can because they're a nuisance. But I do agree that those small label printers you can get for your home to label stuff are pretty practical. So, Ian, just a reminder, you bought a label maker.
Yes.
Can you confirm that they are practical or a nuisance in the last week?
I think they are very practical. I put the IP addresses of my various mesh network discs on one, so if I ever needed to remember, I could just tippy tap it into my keyboard. I've got to say, it's not an aesthetic decision that I've made. It's quite ugly, but hey, you know, it works. It does the job.
Excellent.
Very good. Very practical. I think everyone should have one.
I agree. And if anyone wants to write in about label makers or indeed anything we've talked about on the show this week, hello@uktechshow.com. That's where you can send them to. If you'd rather have a wider understanding of what's been happening in the tech world, go and listen to Daily Tech News Show. And if you want more convincing as to why that should be the case, here's Tom Merritt.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, data scientist Andrea Jones-Roy helped us understand how it is that human bias can creep into an AI algorithm. Did you hear about Twitter allegedly giving 4,000 employees access to your data? Well, Rod Simmons explains why companies don't do better at controlling internal network security. New 3D printing tech speeds up high-res resin printing. High-resin printing? Anyway, Congressional Dish's Jen Briney explained what's actually in the U.S. CHIPS Act and how it's going to affect consumers. And Robert Herron was here to tell you what's actually a cool new feature in a television and what's just marketing hype. All that and the whole Musk Twitter thing at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
What a jam-packed week. That is
Really impressive. High resin, that's exceptionally good. I like that.
Yeah, well done, Tom. Clap. Bravo. yeah, go and listen to DTNS. I may or may not be on later this month. That is to say, I will be. but I'll tell you when that is, because it's not for a couple of weeks. Okay, Ian, I think that's been everything. We're grateful to our listeners, aren't we?
We're very grateful, because without them, it's just you and me recording bits into a certain sequence and then just leaving them somewhere.
Yeah.
With our listeners, those bits go off into the universe and will forever echo across the time of space-time.
Yeah. If you'd like them to echo into the review section of wherever you get your podcasts, that would be even more useful. Apple Podcasts is key, and putting a star in Spotify, I'm led to believe, is how you do the equivalent over there. Wherever you're getting your podcasts, please do tell them. If you really want to help, here's a great thing to do. Simply remove all your clothing, go to the nearest town to you, stand on a very tall building, and just inform everybody that they need to listen to the podcast.
Or you could nominate me for the House of Lords.
Yeah, you could.
Because then I'd be a lord.
Yeah.
Lord Morris of text message.
See you next week, everybody.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president. You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.